broadcasting worldwide on internet radio.
Refreshing takes on legal strategies.
Straightforward answers to difficult tax questions.
Independent ideas on building wealth. It's the Refresher Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen.
Get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.
Now, here's Mark and Matt.
Welcome, everyone, to another amazing hour of the Refresh Your Wealth podcast. Thanks so much for joining us today. I'm honored, of course, to be joined by the illustrious Mark J. Kohler. He's my co-host, and I think he's going to be carrying the water today and doing the work on the field, so to speak.
I'm the water boy. That's fair enough.
And you're playing. Well, I'm going to be carrying in the field today, in the stands, you know.
You went from an introduction with my middle initial, which was quite formal, to you're going to be the water boy.
Well, you know, I mean, you do use that middle initial often.
I do.
In fact, because you use that middle initial so much, everyone likes to throw my middle initial in everything.
Well, I don't know if many of you know this. There's a Mark Kohler that is a, when I was starting to kind of, you know, brand myself, kind of, you know, coming out, I'm ready to play nationwide. I'm going to make it happen. You know, I was excited about 10, 12 years ago. Mm-hmm. I started Googling my name, and every time I Googled Mark Kohler, there's this outdoor, I guess, nature, what do you call it? Wildlife artist. He's pretty good. You know, I'll give him that. You know, he had some nice kind of Bob Ross, you know, wildlife portraits. I was impressed, but I couldn't get on. I felt bad.
You were like on page two. You were behind this guy.
I was page two, man. I got to bump myself.
So you threw in the towel and you said, I can't be Mark Kohler. I got to change my name. I got to be Mark J. Kohler.
I got to be Mark J. And I'm proud of that. I'm proud of that, J. It's my grandpa's name. He was a stud, so.
Okay, that's cool.
Yeah, so.
You should have gone with that. That's a better story.
Oh.
It's for my grandpa. He's a stud. I just want him to remember, you know, just honor him. Well, instead I was losing to this wildlife photographer on Google search.
Artist. Photographer. Okay. There's a distinction there.
But okay. Yeah. You know, there was a Matt Sorensen when I was Googling around back in the day, like graffiti artist from somewhere in Scandinavia.
Oh. And
he was dominating. Yeah. So. Yeah. There you go.
Scandinavian graffiti to Texas wildlife artist. We have our roots.
That's right. We got our nemesis out there. Yeah. So, well, thanks for being here, guys. I appreciate you hearing us for a second. We try to keep this light because we talk about important things, really about living the American dream, saving on taxes, protecting your assets. And today is going to be none other, right, Mark?
Oh, yeah. We got an awesome topic today, setting up your own nonprofit. Charity, foundation, all the above. There's a lot there. And so we're going to kind of break it down. This is a consultation that Matt and I have on a regular basis. I've got two or three nonprofits I'm working on right now. And so this is common for us to talk about. And we haven't done a show on this forever.
Yeah. And this is not to be confused with the not profitable business. That's a different problem or different legal situation. This is the nonprofit business, not the not profitable business. So, well, we're going to try and break that down for you guys today and go over how to set that up properly, what qualifies, what doesn't, let you know what to expect, how to build that properly. Maybe learn some of the lessons easily here instead of the hard way of so many of our clients have had to do.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people have this as a long-term dream or bucket list. You know, they want to be successful as a business owner. They want to give back. And you look at Bill and Melinda Gates for years, he said, hey, when I do it, I'm going to do it right. And then he threw down $1 billion and got Warren Buffett on board. And I mean, he did it right is what he said, but there's a lot, I'm not going to throw down $1 billion for nonprofit. I don't have $1 billion, but a lot of people want it.
If you had 55 billion, would you throw down one of them?
Sure.
For nonprofit?
I mean, you know, it's chump change.
A tenth of it. I mean, come on. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I might throw down, you know, $100 into a nonprofit. I mean, no, but I'm really, but I had a phone call yesterday with some clients out of Texas. They may be listening to the show today, and they're remembering that. I'm not going to disclose their name or their idea and what they're doing, but this is very common, and they were really excited. They're coming to the stage in their business cycle where their life cycle where they were like, hey, it's time. And so many of you, this would be a good show to at least put in your back pocket to say, hey, it's not terribly expensive. It doesn't have to be overwhelming. And here's what I need to think about. So when you're at night thinking, oh, I want to do something to make the world a better place, you can remember this show, what you got to do.
Yeah. Well, before we dig into that topic, of course, we like to give you some tax and legal tips here. And I'm just going to go first. I'm just going to claim the spot.
Sure.
Is that all right with you?
Jeez. I mean, gosh. Just take away, you know.
Yeah, live life that way. You know,
I'm just the water boy. So whatever you want to do.
That's okay. All right, sit tight, water boy.
A tax tip you can actually understand and won't put you to sleep.
A tax tip that could save you thousands.
All right. Well, the legal tip today I want to talk about relates to my blog article. Of course, you can sign up for the newsletter, where you get updates on our blog articles at refreshyourwealth.com.
Which was a fine blog article, if I may say myself.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. You're endorsed welcome. By the water boy.
Yes. So
if he can understand it and appreciate it, you know.
Then anybody
can. I don't know why I'm just seeing Adam Sandler right now. I don't remember much about that movie, but anyways, it was let's be real, it wasn't that great.
Yeah.
Okay. let me get to my tip, all right?
I know, I was thinking too. Remember any particular scene? No.
I know.
Can't Happy Gilmore, I do. Happy Gilmore, I can say.
Exactly.
That's one of my favorite.
Billy Madison, I can, for sure.
Yeah, Waterboy, good concept. Just didn't stick. Yeah,
just didn't hit, you know.
Yeah, we got to get off that topic today. Okay, so what's your legal tip? Your blog article. Yes, I remember your blog article.
What we're talking about in the blog article is, when do I need to set up my entity in another state? So let's say, for example, I do business in one state, or I've set up my company in one state, and now I'm operating in another state. And it could be as simple as I have a rental property in Arizona owned by my Arizona LLC, and then the next rental property I buy is in Indiana. Well, do I use my Arizona LLC in Indiana? Do I have to do anything? How do I operate that way? So
all sorts of options. There's why you might call one of our lawyers and say,
exactly.
Rather than guess on LegalZoom, I'm going to give you guys a call and maybe get some advice. I'm just a spitballing here. Just kind of a
spitball. I know that's a crazy idea. That's not the legal tip, guys. I'm going to give you some content. That's not the tip. today's show is sponsored by KQS Lawyers. Thank you.
There you go.
They're a support of the show. So the first option you have, which I think is the easiest, is take that Arizona entity, this Arizona LLC, and register it foreign into Indiana. And now Indiana is going to recognize my Arizona LLC. I'm doing business in Indiana with that Indiana rental property. And that's probably the simplest way to go about it. I'm getting the liability protection of the LLC. Now I've got two properties in the LLC. I've got the Arizona property and the Indiana property in the same LLC. And because of that, if you have a lot of equity in your properties, you may want to do a separate Indiana LLC just for asset protection purposes. But if you want to keep it simple, just use the LLC you already have, register it foreign. It's really important though that in states you're operating your business, let's say you have an operational business, a storefront or anything like that, you're going to need to register the entity you're using in the state you're doing business. And in the article, I list some of the states that have penalties for failure to register your entity. Some of those penalties get into the thousands of dollars for failure to register in a state you're operating in. There's also some clarification in some states about, well, do I get the limited liability protection? Let's say I have a Nevada entity I set up online because I listened to some AM radio, or I got sold from some headquarters in Nevada, some BS entity in Nevada, but I do business in Texas or California. Are they going to recognize that entity if I don't register it into Texas or California where I actually run my business? They're not. Okay. There's some problems there. You end up in a lawsuit and in court, the court's not going to recognize you until you're registered into the state. So a lot of liability concerns there for failure to register. Be careful. Also penalties, as I mentioned. So check out the article. There's some more detail on that. And just know, when you go to another state, you got to abide by the next state's laws. And the easiest way to do that is register your existing entity you've already got.
All right. Wow. You did give us some meat there, Matt. Those are good tips. Those are good tips. Some of you were like, that was a lot. You're going to want to go back and listen to that, especially if you have
operations. Sometimes we'll do a 15, 30 minute consult on that, you know, weighing the pros and cons. What type of business activity do you have? Do we do a new entity versus using an existing one? Is it a different type of entity than the one you're already using? Are you doing a different type of business in the other state? You know, there's a lot to that. I'm just simplifying it though, for purpose of the tip. And of course the article's got some more detail.
Yeah, I love it. Good job. All right. Well, my tax tip actually relates to this, and this was no foregoing planning here, folks. You may think that we've got some master plan to coordinate the show. No, we don't.
You may hope that. You may hope that we do. Yeah,
you might hope, but no, that would not be a wise move. But this tip actually does relate. So let's throw down a riff here.
A tax tip you can actually understand and won't put you to sleep.
A tax tip that could save you thousands.
All right, that was powerful. And I'm here with your tax tip for you. And I want to talk about paying taxes in other states because you're doing business in that state. Now, I'll stick with Matt's example for a moment, and then I'll give a little more fun, exciting one, because my examples are always better than Matt's. But this, you know, Matt's got a rental property in Indiana. How boring is that? But if he did, he's going to have to pay taxes in Indiana if he makes money in Indiana, right? You know, got to file there. Now, so Arizona will give him a tax credit so he doesn't pay double state tax. But Indiana's going to say, you got to pay your fair share if you're going to own a rental here. Now, the example I might throw out is it's football season right around the corner. You know, we're in NFL preseason right now. It's getting exciting. Just around the corner. College football opens up this weekend. I'm stoked. Yeah. So let's talk one of the most hated quarterbacks and beloved, probably the most loved and hated on both ends of the spectrum, Tom Brady. Now, if you're not a football fan, here's what you may need to know. He plays for the New England Patriots based out of Massachusetts, and Boston, just like to say that, Boston. Okay, but anyway, Tom Brady, he's a quarterback. Now, he plays for the New England Patriots. Now, what happens when he goes and plays a football game in New Jersey? And why would he play in New Jersey? Oh, he's going to play the New York Giants, but they actually play in New Jersey. Isn't that funny? Did any of you know that? But they don't want to be the New Jersey Giants. Who wants to be the New Jersey Giants?
No one wants to root for the New Jersey Giants.
Yeah, but they play in the Meadowlands, New Jersey. So anyway, guess who gets to tax Tom Brady? Because he's going to go play a football game in New Jersey. So he has to take his NFL salary and divide it among the different locations he plays football games this year. Is that crazy? When I was a young accountant, I was working in Portland, Oregon for KPMG, the Big Five back in the day. You accountants might appreciate that. So I was working in the state tax department, and I got the chance to work on one of the Portland Trailblazers. A little tongue-tied there. So I worked on their tax return, and this NBA player's tax return was like 3 inches thick because he had to allocate his NBA salary amongst all these different locations. Crazy. So the tax return gets a little hairy. So Tom Brady's going to have to give some of his money to New Jersey for his NFL salary. But does it end there? No, it does not, because he has – an endorsement. He has a Gatorade endorsement. And so he's getting big money from Gatorade to be on a commercial here and there, or maybe hold a drink of Gatorade on a photo or who knows what. Well, when Gatorade gives him his paycheck, New Jersey's like, you can't come into our stadium and play a football game and have that cool Gatorade commercial playing, because you're going to play in our state, which increases your notoriety, which makes your contract for Gatorade more valuable. So we want some of that Gatorade revenue too. Is that nuts? So he's got to take his overall income and bifurcate it or split it up amongst all the states where he plays. Now, if he just happens to go do a golf tournament down in Florida for a weekend, he's not down there to play football, he He's not doing business in Florida. He's just down there for a golf tournament, not to make money, but for a charity, let's say. He's not doing business in Florida. But what's his business? Playing football. So if he is playing football in any state, he's going to have to take that ratio of number of games and divide it up amongst all these states. Then he's got investments and rental property. Can you imagine his tax return? Okay, so here's the moral of the story, everybody. Even little Matt Sorensen that has a rental property in Indiana has to pay tax in Indiana when he does business there. And for many of you, you're going to do business in other states. Now, rental properties are a classic example. Now, don't think because I may fly into Honolulu and Hawaii and give a little workshop for a day once or twice a year, I'm not going to be doing business in Hawaii because I don't have an office there. I don't have employees there. I don't have nexus in Hawaii. It's an isolated circumstance where I show up for one day and get a nominal fee. It's nominal income.
So that's what Tom Brady says when he goes and plays football for, yeah, for 3 hours.
Yeah, they don't pay him much. You know, it's nominal. So anyway, the point is there's books, court cases, Supreme Court cases on what's called nexus. And when you start doing business in other states, when do you avail yourself to get taxed there? Owning real estate's one of them. That's easy. So you have a rental property in Indiana, you got to pay tax there. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so we could go on and on. Big topic. Sorry, Matt. Just got carried away with Tom Brady there and the NFL. But
I get it. I get it.
It's exciting. So that's my tip. Be aware of it, folks. Don't be pissed off at your accountant. Don't be mad at the IRS. This is states. This is states saying, hey, you can't come into our state and have fun in New Jersey and not pay some taxes there. So
that's right. You can't make it out of there alive. You got to pay something.
Yeah.
Well, that's a good tip. I like how we tag teamed that topic. You know, it's just like peanut butter and jelly right there. It just went together perfectly.
No, we don't even plan it. It just happens because it's the magic of this show.
That's very true. Well, let's get into the topic today about setting up a nonprofit. Okay. I think this is one, Mark, I know you spend a lot more time on, I think, than I have. And I was just going to say, before we even get into this, it's something Mark and I have talked about doing, you know, and I even was going to do one personally about 1 or 2 years ago. And I made a goal on my own personal goals. I'm like, my charitable goal is I'm going to start a nonprofit in an area that I cared about, helping essentially teenage parents. And I was all gung-ho on it. And I got out there and I thought, this is not the right time for me. It's too early. But I thought, I still want to serve. So I found other ways to volunteer at other nonprofits and to be involved in things where I felt like I could provide value. Because I still wanted to, you know, have just that personal commitment to volunteering and helping other people. So I want to say that as one of the things, as you get into this topic about wanting to start a nonprofit, you may be like, and this, as Mark said, this may be something you're thinking about later in life. You may be on the cusp of it right now. But before you start a nonprofit, maybe start doing some volunteering. See how other nonprofits work. And you may be already doing that right now, but I think that's a great way just to, you know, make that time commitment and just kind of get the energy of it, I should say. That's what I'm trying to do because I'm not there yet. But I just want to send that out to those who may be like, looking at this and thinking, should I do it? Should I not?
You know, and I think, Matt, I didn't even expect you to go there right off the bat. And I think that's a really good comment because sometimes it's good to wet your whistle, if you will, or kind of get your feet wet. Volunteering for another nonprofit, find out how this works. You know, did you like the way they did it? Did you like the format of their board? And were they really screwing it up? And learn from it. So when you do your own nonprofit, you don't make their own mistakes. And then you might see things they're doing that you love. Plus, you get the fever and passion, and you may find that that's not the area you want to volunteer. You thought, oh, I want to put tennis shoes on kids in South Africa. And then all of a sudden you get working in that area, and you're like, I really want to help kids on a Navajo reservation in South Nevada. You know, I want to do something more. Mm-hmm. There's plenty of need in the United States. Don't think you have to go to another country either. So
sure. Yeah.
Anyway, I think that's a good point, man.
Well, let's maybe talk here about what qualifies for a nonprofit. I mean, I want to start a nonprofit. I want to go do good in the world. What qualifies? What counts?
Yeah. And let me, if you don't mind, Matt, I'll pose the question, I will throw out an answer, and I'm sure you have an answer too. A good lawyer never asks an answer he doesn't know the answer. Sorry, never asks a question he doesn't know the answer to. That's the rule in court.
Yeah, unless he really doesn't know what he's doing.
Yeah, hence why I do not go to court. I just watch Law and Order, but I'm a boardroom attorney. I know what I'm doing in the boardroom. I have to run circles around that boardroom, but not the courtroom. Okay, so let me say this, and we will go through maybe what to expect cost-wise and turnaround time. We're going to hit all that. But I think, Matt, it's important that I like what you said, is how do you go about this process? And really, when we have a client call us up and say, I want to do a nonprofit, we send them a memo that's about 2 to 3 pages long. It's a list of everything we're going to need to get their nonprofit going. And from what's your website going to look like, to your purpose, to your mission statement, how are you going to raise money? How are you going to deploy it? How are you going to make the world a better place? But I think the real crux of it is question one, what is your nonprofit purpose? And a lot of people are trying to shoehorn a nonprofit into helping their own business. And I think it's important to say right off the bat, if you're going to do a nonprofit, do a freaking nonprofit. Don't think, oh, I'm going to set this up so it's going to help my own business. Because the IRS smells that coming. They see it.
Yeah. And that's like, let me give you an example of ones I've heard, we're going to help veterans buy homes. Okay. So what are you going to do? Well, we have our other company that builds homes and we're going to raise money in the nonprofit that's going to then pay for these homes that we're going to build because we're going to sell them to veterans and make money. Wait a second. No. Okay. If you have any connection to your own personally making money, or your own companies that are contracting with the nonprofit, that's going to get shot down immediately. That's in the questionnaire that you have to fill out. You have to have a policy that actually restricts that when you're a nonprofit, and your bylaws are going to restrict that. So if there's any
self-dealing,
personal business, self-dealing where you're financially benefiting out of this thing, that nonprofit ain't going to fly.
Yeah, no, great point. And now, can there be some sort of relationship? Sure, you might have your Microsoft employees help out with the nonprofit and go help build a well in, you know, South America for a village that has no fresh water, but it's part of the Gates Foundation. I mean, you can have your own business participate and serve and help, but once you start trying to create some sort of backdoor financial benefit, we're going to discourage you from that. Really have a true purpose of trying to help the public. Now, let me get this out here too. There's different types of charities. There's public charities, private foundations. There's all these variations. The vanilla bread and butter charity that most of us are familiar with is what's called a public charity, where you're going to have fundraisers and black tie affairs and a website and GoFundMes, and people can donate money, and this charity is going to make the world a better place. And it could be locally or across the world. But this charity has to have this charitable purpose, and more than 33% of your donations have to come from the general public. If it's called tipping the scale. If more than 33% come from yourself, then it turns into what's called a private foundation. And a private foundation is okay, but you don't get as big a write-off when you put money in it because you control it. It's a foundation by you. If Bill Gates gives money to Red Cross, he gets a bigger write-off than if he gives money to his own foundation because he's the primary donor to the foundation. So you want to think about this. I really like people that go out and get the public involved in the charitable fundraising so that you tip the scale and you qualify as a public charity, that's going to be a better route to get support and help and, I think, make the world a better place. You get more people involved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great point. I think, and you can do either one. I've helped clients set up both. One thing you will see, though, with the private foundation, that's more you're going to have a key group of people that support it. A lot of kind of rank and file people don't like to contribute to, you know, someone you're just going to throw in $50 or something. They don't like to contribute to a private foundation as much as they do a public charity. But if you're like, hey, I've got my family's going to really back this and we're going to be the main supporters of it and we can rely on our financials, that could be a good fit. And the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation is a private foundation. So but obviously doing a lot of good work in the world.
Yeah.
So, all right, let's go through, let's just maybe the process of what's involved. You've got the questionnaire we send out, Mark. Now we got to file some stuff with the state. We're going to file articles of a nonprofit corporation with the state,
which we prefer,
prefer. And I think it's funny because a lot of times clients will come to us and like, I have a nonprofit. Oh, you do? Okay, cool. So the IRS has said you're a nonprofit. Well, I filed articles with the state. I filed the nonprofit company with the state and the state approved it. Well, okay. No. They filed the nonprofit company, but your tax status is taxable until the IRS and your state says it's not.
Yeah.
And so a marathon. That's the big part of it.
Yeah. And a marathon, you're about 2 or 3 miles down the road, but you certainly haven't finished the race. And you want to get to that. You want to get to that finish line and get approval from the IRS officially. And that letter will go on your website that shows that you're legit. And you'll actually go in a database for the IRS that shows you're legit. There's a lot of scams in this area. That's probably a point we should make in this conversation today. But we're assuming here, of course, anybody listening today, you have an altruistic purpose. You're not, trying to get around laws or rip people off. So you're doing it legit. So you want to get on that IRS database. You want full on approval. Let's hit some of the basics here. We charge around $3,000. We're $3,000 to do it from start to finish, flat fee. Some may think that's a little high. We've had clients walk in the door that have spent $10,000. In fact, most law firms are going to be north of $5,000. We feel $3,000 is not a big profit maker per se. You'd be shocked how much time goes into it. A lot of time.
Yeah, you see these IRS forms, and your head's going about it's going to explode. It's quite a bit of work. So
and it's
And there's a big filing fee too, though, right? So it's $3,000 that's our fee, but the IRS fee is $700.
Yeah,
how much is it?
It can range from $400 to $800, and there's an easy form, but you've got to answer 30 questions with the answer no before you qualify for that. And there's a lot involved. But a lot of the times you're paying, for the $3,000, we include the corporation, you're filing with the state, and then the entire process start to finish with the IRS. No matter how many times they bug us and ask us questions, your fee doesn't go up. You just got to pay the filing fee to the state and the filing fee to the IRS.
That'll include the bylaws. That's a big part of your nonprofit filing. As you get through the nonprofit application, this is the Form 1023. There's going to be a lot of questions about what's in your bylaws. So you're going to have certain restrictions in place and clauses in there that, basically say that the officers and directors who are running this, which we're going to talk about in a second, are not doing it to benefit themselves. They're not taking excessive salaries, that the company's not contracting with or sending money to companies that the directors and officers are related to. So, but those are be in the actual bylaws of your nonprofit.
Yeah. And I want to be, when we say $700 to $800, it's because we're kind of including the state fee in that too. The Form 23 is $600. And if you can get by with an EZ filing, it's $275. I've never had a client qualify for the EZ. It's brutal. But so you might be out $3,000 to $4,000 when this is all over. But here's the thing. Once it's done, let me say it this way. You can actually start taking donations from people immediately. Mm-hmm. And the IRS allows you to retroactively get status. So we can make it effective January 1st, 2018, but you've got this 9-month look back. So you want to get your application off right away if you're trying to get a look back at that point this year. But it can be a lot of fun. Matt, let me put an example on this. I've got some clients, we're a sponsor. Our law firm sponsors them. We love them. They're Derby. It's Roller Derby, Women's League Roller Derby. Yes, it still exists. And some of you may be fans of the 2009 movie Whip It with Drew Barrymore. My girls love it. They think it's just classic. It's like this B movie. There's a lot of stars in it too. You'd be shocked. But if you want a funny movie late at night, you're in a funny mood, you got to be in one of those funny moods, kind of a Nacho Libre. You got to be feeling funny. Whip It is pretty fun. So anyway, this client of ours, they're a league down in San Diego, California. And they set up a nonprofit to raise money and help kids, girls specifically, skate and stay active and healthy. And they're raising money for this nonprofit to roller do roller derby. And so I help them with their application, and we're still in the process. I mean, it's a 6 to 9 month process of getting it finally approved. They're anxious. I'm anxious. If any of you ladies are listening, I'm working for you. I love you. They all have nicknames, kind of like the movie. It's kind of funny.
Yeah.
I got a nickname.
You know, we, Ruth in our office did some roller derby. Guess, do you want to know what her nickname was?
No, what?
Ruthless.
Ruth. Are you joking around? Did Ruth really do roller derby?
Yeah. She had another one. It's something about like, it was, it had something to do with murder. It was like, dang.
Yeah. It's funny. Yeah. I get these emails from the ladies and they'll have these fun little mayhem and Molly Mayhem and all the, I don't know. I'm just throwing it out. That's I don't want their emails up. I don't want to throw their names out, but it's just funny. And I got my own nickname. I'm T-Bone.
T-Bone?
So, yeah.
Okay. T-Bone.
Which is a Seinfeld reference for you, you know, classic Seinfeld fans. That's a George Costanza nickname, but I don't know.
Okay.
Part of that. To be part of the ladies, part of the roller derby. Okay, but anyway, you can do some fun things with a nonprofit, which is exciting too. So look for about a 6 to 9 month turnaround, around $3,000 to $4,000 in fees. You can start taking donations to pay the fee, or you can pay the fee, take donations, and reimburse yourself.
And you can operate in that IRS nonprofit status pending kind of scenario. So people could make donations that they would be able to have tax deductible, so long as your application goes through. So as we have some good advice about and know what's the certainty of this is going to get approved or not. And most people that are filing for a nonprofit are kind of in a lane of, there's 50 of them out there that are doing what we're doing. We're just doing it in our location. Sometimes we've had some really novel ones. I mean, I was 6 months ago doing one with cryptocurrency and nonprofits and my mind was about to explode. I'm like, well, this is going to be a first for sure. And I guarantee you the IRS is going to sit on this one forever because you put the word cryptocurrency in it. But so there's definitely the more novel ones, which are going to take longer.
Yeah.
We'd
patch some in a month, you know, you can expedite them if you're urgent.
Yeah. So, all right. So we've got the articles to the state. We're going to do the Form 1023, which is a big endeavor. We know it takes some time. What are some of the mechanics though, Mark, and who's involved in that? Like, you know, we've talked about the board of directors and officers. What are some of the rules on that or good advice in picking people to be involved? Because no one owns the nonprofit, right?
Yeah.
Remember guys, if you say, this is my nonprofit. Oh, really? It's your nonprofit. No one owns a nonprofit.
Yeah.
It's ownerless. It's run by its board of directors.
Yeah.
So
and very true.
Frankly, that starts from who starts the thing. That initial board of directors starts it and they then get replaced over time. And that's how that thing runs.
I love it. Yeah, exactly. And we recommend most people start with a board of at least five. Five board members is a good fit. You'll see some nonprofits as many as 7 or 9, usually one odd number so you can not have deadlock in voting and decision-making. You're going to put in your officers, your president, secretary, and treasurer, and they're going to rotate. Usually board members serve for 2 years, then they're bumped off. The board can vote to keep you on. It's a democracy, folks. This is not your own little pet bank account and maybe your pet project, but if you're giving your whole heart and soul, trust me, people are going to keep you on there. But you have to realize that if you screw up and don't do your job, the board can remove you and it lives on. And the IRS will enforce this if you take advantage of it.
So I'll say this though, if this is you want this to be, you know, the next 10 or 20 years of your life, you want to really commit to this nonprofit and you want to be involved for that long of a cycle, be careful who you put on your board. I mean, these have got to be really trusted people who are going to be interested in what you're doing and believe in you and keep you in that spot because, you know, it really is, it's run by those people you put on the board.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is when
you got to have the votes, baby.
Yeah, and this is why folks will sometimes move to the private foundation status. They'll just put a ton of their own money in it, and then they can control the distributions and the process a little bit more. But public charities require that democracy-type approach. Another thing that I think is important many of you keep in mind is that you don't have to have $1 million to do it. I mean, you could raise $30,000. You can do that with a good golf tournament, a couple black tie affairs. We've got a nonprofit just right here below our building that they do a 5K, kind of a mud run every year. And they raise money with donors and all the proceeds go to the nonprofit. You can do, you don't have to have a lot of money to do it. And just get started. I mean, if you can envision yourself raising $10,000 to $20,000 with friends, family, neighbors, and a couple little projects and a fun mm-hmm. little fundraiser of some sort, get it going. Just start testing the waters. You don't have to be rich to do it. And I wanted to say public disclosure. An important thing is having a good website, disclosing where the money's spent. That's another point. I know I'm throwing out a lot, but there's a lot to it. So I think being transparent about where the money's going, having reports on your website, the tax return on the website, the IRS approval on your website, people are more likely to donate when they know you're legit. And so Matt, any comments on that? You don't have to have a lot of money and disclosure, right? I threw out two topics there, sorry.
Yeah. And a lot of your records are going to be open and available to the public, you know, where your personal tax return is private, obviously, the nonprofits is not. And you'll file a 990 return for the nonprofit. But a lot of your reporting you're going to send in, obviously they'll sanitize certain information like socials and things like that. But a lot of that's public, and certain donors over a certain amount are publicly available. So people could look up. And so, you want to operate in a full transparency, obviously, because that's just a good way of doing business with other people. But the IRS is going to be sharing a lot of that information, whether you like it or not.
Yeah. And I don't know. Maybe there's some final takeaways here, but I think nonprofit, getting involved in a nonprofit is a really neat experience. And if you're ever depressed, start serving someone, and you know, things will turn around quick. And if you ever are in a rut, if any of you are listening to this and you feel like, I'm in a weird funk this year, maybe for a couple of years, maybe for a month or so, and you just feel like, you know, you might be beat down by life and you feel a little picked on, and all of us get into these self-pity parties. We all do. And I've been there. And a lot of times you can really snap out of it by just walking into the hospital and going, what can I do to volunteer? Go to the local Salvation Army. There's so many nonprofits around you. You just have to start searching. There's some great apps out there. A lot of different churches have apps where you can just say, I want to serve. And you start, contact whatever denomination you're a part of and say, I want to serve. And you go, man, you start finding out you don't have it as bad as you think. And there's a lot of people that need you. And when you start giving and helping someone else feel better, it's funny how your
problems seem so insignificant now. Whatever you're unhappy about is just not important. That's really good advice. Well, I was just going to leave my little advice and just kind of to piggyback on what I said at the beginning too, is I like a lot of those out there who like to set goals. You know, I'm a big goal setter, and it's on my list of things to do is have a nonprofit. It's not my time right now. I've got other things in front of that, but still find the time to serve. It helps keep that fire alive of helping other people. But keep it as a goal too. If you're not ready, keep it as a goal, and just know you can come back to it. And again, I want to just one other thing. Find the right people to do this with, you know, just like as you in any of your business or any other activities you may do. I don't care whether it's a softball team, you're going to pick the people you like spending time with, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Maybe they're good at softball, but more than likely, they're just the people you like to spend time with and hang out with. And that's the same thing in your nonprofit. You'll be more successful in it. You're going to enjoy yourself. And this is something you're doing to benefit other people. So get those that you love and you like being with involved in it.
Oh, Matt, you're getting me going. We keep looking for a closure here, but I'll say this too, that it is a good networking opportunity. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
You know, if you are trying to build a business and brand yourself or get known in the community or get known in an industry, nationwide, regionally, in your state, in your county, in your city, whatever it is, you start getting involved in charities, you meet some incredible people. And if you want to hobnob with people that normally won't give you the time of day because you're trying to sell them something, but you're willing to talk about their charity or go volunteer at their charity, it can open a lot of doors. Now, you're not doing it with ulterior motives, and people will see through that if you're just doing it to make a buck or to build a relationship to sell something. But if you truly get into it, karma has a way of coming back and blessing you. You know, it really does. Mm-hmm. You get out of life what you put into it. And if there's nothing wrong with that, you know, it can enhance your business. Mm-hmm. And I think that's not a bad thing. But let it happen naturally. Don't force it. And so I don't know, Matt, if you have any thoughts on that.
I mean, we've both done that. And I know when I started just my legal career going to helping at the Chamber of Commerce, you know, that's kind of a group
put some time in
businesses, you know. But as a lawyer, I've started working with the Low Income Taxpayer Clinic here, which is part of the legal services division at the you know, in the state. And just helping people that have weird tax situations, the IRS or state's chasing them down, and they can't afford a lawyer to help them. And that's been just a good thing. And I have actually met the director that runs that office is an amazing person. And we talk real estate. She's a real estate investor on the side, this little, you know, public interest lawyer out there saving the world and doing real estate on the side. We always love talking shop about that stuff. But it is a great place to meet really good people. I mean, a lot of people that volunteer, those are the people you want to be friends with. Frank, you're looking for a friend, go volunteer at a nonprofit. There's some good people there.
Yeah, it's true. And, you know, Matt may now disclosed he's one step away from working at death row, trying to save people from the, you know.
There's a time for that, too. I want to do that, too, actually.
Gosh, dude, I was just joking around. Look at this. That's how deep my partner is here, man. He's just, he's like an onion. There's just layers, my friends. But last point I will make, too. I love putting on a good fundraiser. I'm known amongst some of our close friends and community of putting together a good golf tournament. Matt and I have both done that. Putting together a good black tie affair with a variety show or a band or some music or a speaker. I love a good, I've done triathlons, duathlons, 5Ks. And there's companies out there that'll help you put these things on. And of course, that's probably the better way to go than hack it out like I've done in the past. But you know, just have fun with it, you know, and just get out there and it's really cool. Okay. Well, that's your nonprofit. There you go. We're going to kind of, I'm going to call the time of death. We're just going to do it. We're going to pull the record here. Keep it in mind, people, this is it's a really neat thing that you can work towards in your business, in your life. And many of you that are just still building your own business or corporate America or W-2 day job or a professional, that's okay. You don't have to be a business owner to run an office. It's something anybody can do. And it just takes some planning and you can get donations to help you get over the hump. We're here for you. Mm-hmm. So Matt, any final words? Okay. Take us out, baby.
No, thanks everyone for being with us. Of course, we're going to be back next week with another amazing hour of the Refresh Your Wealth podcast. And make sure you get over to refreshyourwealth.com. You can check out all the prior shows, search them. Of course, you can search them in your iTunes history or Stitcher or wherever you're consuming this podcast. But stay in touch with us through the site and the newsletter, and we will see you next week.
Thanks for listening to another hour of Refreshing Strategies to Better Live Your American Dream.
Don't forget to get your free copy of Mark and Matt's eBooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.